All right, you're back in the DFSR. We're here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, January 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And I've got a little horse in my throat. Do you have horses in your throat?
Frogs in your throat. No, that's not how that works.
Yeah, you have something, I got something in my throat. It's making me sound not so great today. But I'm a hero, so I'm going to work through it. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started or keep winning on FanDuel or DraftKings NBA. You can head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to the projection system. That's going to inform most of what we talk about here on these podcasts. It informs our free content articles that you can read that are going up multiple times a day. Really everything you need to get started if you're doing NBA DFS for either of those two sites. It's free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. So no downside to just trying it out and seeing what you think. All right, this is Tuesday basketball. I had an almost impossible time writing the picks for tonight, mostly because if you look at this schedule, eight of the slowest nine teams in the NBA are playing on the schedule. I mean, it is. I was looking at it and I'm thinking, man, there's just point per dollar ratios are really low, like in the original projections. And then I looked at it, and that's because the Mavericks, the Jazz, the Grizzlies, the Pistons, the Spurs, the Kings, the Heat, we skipped Chicago, they played yesterday, and then the Timberwolves are playing today. And those are eight of the nine slowest teams in the league, all with varying levels of defensive efficiency. So you're staring down at the barrel sort of at not a ton of value. And then the guys on those teams going the other way either have sort of okay matchups, or their teams just play fast and loose with the minutes, and you just don't really know where exactly they're going to be going. So this is anyway, that's my 2-minute long opening to say, yikes on this slate.
Strap in, huh?
Yeah, it's just really one of those things, like when you're looking at, if this is your first time understanding this, then just a very simple kind of like easy way to begin looking at grabbing value in DFS is to roster guys who are going against faster paced, slash defensively inefficient teams. And there are some combinations of the two, like the Nets this season are fast and bad at defense. Some other teams are fast and decent at defense. The teams that are playing today are slow, which means you get a pace downgrade, which means you just touch the ball less, which means you just accrue less stats in general on the fantasy side of things. And when that happens for half of the slate, legit half of the slate are these really slow teams, it's a night where you're just going to be staring at plays that you just don't really want to make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, my friend.
Yeah. When I say that, I mean like, you're like, I'm gonna play so and so against the Jazz. Oh God, and then you kind of just go all the way down the line with it. So
yeah, and normally that would be terrible, except when everyone is slow and bad, then it's not as bad.
No, it's not as bad, and there's definitely value to be had. And we've noticed a couple things that are sort of cropping up in terms of the way sites are doing pricing, but we'll take a look at that as we go. Let's start with point guard. I think the chalk play really is going to be TJ McConnell. It looks like Sergio Rodriguez is going to sit out again. Sixers stink, obviously, but they really don't have anyone behind McConnell with Sergio out, Bayless is still out, so they don't really have any other point guard types. Do you think McConnell ends up being just like the highest owned player on the whole slate tonight?
I think so. I mean, he was a 48% start on a big slate last time around for cash games, and that was with like some serious competition. Like Malcolm Brogdon was also on that slate, as well as a number of high-priced guys that were good, like Westbrook. So I think McConnell will be, north of 70% for sure, and for good reason. I mean, he was excellent in his last game, 17-8-2, played 36 minutes. He'll be out there for most of the game, and I think he'll pay this off easily.
Yeah, no, I think, he's like the one guy that really is not going to creep up on anybody at this point. You probably either rostered him or saw other people rostering last time around when he crushed it, and still, the price climbs a little bit to 4,600 on FanDuel, but not out of the realm of what where you're looking to save. So, and there really aren't any other. This is the other issue. There's just not really any expensive plays outside of Boogie. There's Boogie at right around 12, a little less than 12,000, right? So he's at 11,200. And then the next closest guy on FanDuel is Wall at 9,600. So, the $1,600 downgrade from player one to player two is about as big a spread as you'll see. Guys like McConnell could mean you roster up for Boogie, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah, after him, I wrote up Darren Collison. Collison's a guy. I don't know about you, but are you in the camp where you just like kind of keep waiting for him to be good? Like, do you have like other like leftover afterthoughts of a time when he was like really good in DFS, and I just like keep waiting for that to kind of happen again? Like, none of his stats bear out that this guy is is like anywhere near the same guy. But But do you have like this thought about Collison that I do? Like, I keep waiting. I'm like, Darren Collison, he's good, right? And I just keep saying that to myself.
Well, I stared at this because it's so weird with the Kings, because you look up and down the roster and you're like, okay, it's essentially the same exact team as when he was really good. Like, it's still Rudy Gay and Boogie Cousins. Like, it's all just still the same guys. You know, still on the same team. The pace of play for the Kings has slowed down dramatically, though. Yep. And I think that was partially because of this coaching change that they've gone through. I mean, they always go through coaching changes, but the last one has gone or seen them go from being more of a run and gun team that tries to get up and down the floor to more of a plotting team, which, you know, last year the Kings were frequently in the conversation among the top five fastest teams in the league. And now they're a bottom nine team, as you pointed out, in the open, which you so eloquently gave us earlier. So I think that must be it. Like, just different coaching regime. He just has a smaller role, but I can't say for sure. It still is strange, though, because it's not like he's super old, and it's, like I said, all the same players. So I would like for him to be really good, but I'm just not sure it's coming.
Well, I think the pace of play has slowed down, I think, for them, as they just – their goal is to kind of like walk the ball down the court and get Boogie into some kind of either mismatch with somebody or to try to just run him out in the high post.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
And I guess there's a possibility that Collison just isn't good at that, which very well could be the case if he's just more of an up-and-down player. The thing with him tonight is if Lawson doesn't play, Lawson had some kind of broken face issue. Like, he broke his face. And
yeah, like you do.
Yeah, no, you can break your face. And there, I guess if Lawson weren't to play, I would feel just most comfortable with Collison's minutes. And last game when Lawson had to leave early, Collison ended up becoming like one of those like more the usage guy that I just kind of expected him to be. He took like 16 shots or something like that. It was the second highest on the team after Boogie. There's no Rudy. If Rudy Gay's not there, they really totally and completely lack anyone that can score on that roster. Like after Cousins and him, there's if you look up that roster, it is absolute trash. Like, you know, guys like Matt Barnes and Caspi, Garrett Temple, who actually I wrote up too, but they just need him to score. So I think I would feel really comfortable with Collison if I knew for sure Lawson was going to play. It's still close either way. He's only 4,100 on FanDuel. That's really cheap. We're talking about total punt play at this point with him. But I think those are the kind of directions I'm going to look. You know, after
the Nuggets, one of the actual decent matchups on the slate too.
Right, so. Right. And so I think you can get, like I said, I probably would be willing to do it either way. And I think he becomes close to a must start here if Lawson sits. After those two guys, man, you get guys like Isaiah Thomas against the Jazz, Lowry against the Spurs, Bledsoe against the Heat. I mean, the list goes on and on. Mike Conley, you really can't trust the minutes of that group. Jeff Teague against the Pistons of that group, sort of like this upper tier 7,000 and above group. Any of those guys sort of stand out to you more than the rest of the group?
Yeah, I think Teague, actually. I mean, you wrote him up, so it's kind of low-hanging fruit because I think you'll probably agree with me. But there's actually more to like about this matchup than there appears at first blush, because the Pistons are one of those bottom – they're actually a bottom five pace team on this season, and that's nothing new for them. But kind of interestingly, they've still allowed the eighth most fantasy points to opposing point guards this season. And I think that matchups like this really stand out to me because – you know, normally, like, say you're the Nets, right? The Nets are playing a really fast pace this season, and they've allowed, like, you know, a top three fantasy total to basically every position. Right. So, I mean, they're a good matchup in a vacuum, but it's not like they're particularly bad against point guard. They're just bad, and they play fast. The Pistons, given that they play so slow and they've still allowed these kind of fantasy point totals, it speaks to me that opposing teams are seeing just a huge hole in the defense. And it makes sense. I mean, Reggie Jackson has always, and Ish Smith for that matter, too, earlier this season. These are two guys who can't stay on the court. And not because of their offense, right? Like, they're good offensive players, just that they're so bad on defense that it's hard to leave them out there if the opposing team has a good dribbler on the court. And so I think that's what's going on here. And I think Teague will probably just kind of – I don't know if he can go off on this price anymore. That's a little bit of the concern, is that his price is now pretty high. But I think the floor is pretty reasonable here.
No, I think I'm with you there. He's been a pretty high usage guy. There was a sort of a shift when Monte Ellis was hurt and then now is coming off the bench, but where Teague just ended up becoming a little bit more of a usage guy on that squad. I mean, Paul George sat out at times too, so they were kind of missing a couple of their key elements on offense, and Teague has just taken more of a role in the offense. He's actually run he's done like some nice pick and roll work with Miles Turner at the top too, so... but I think you're right too. Like, the price has climbed with that increased role and him just being better and playing more minutes. 7,100 is starting to push how much you are really getting out of his price. So
and also keep an eye on Teague too, because he does have that little ankle thing. So, you know, he may or may not play tonight, but he also Aaron Brooks might be an interesting play if Teague winds up sitting. So just something to keep on your radar.
Yeah. After those guys, keep an eye on the Goran Dragic situation, which I'm just going to lead into that. I'm going to go into this next thing here with Dragic. So
at shooting, segue.
Best in the business, buddy. At shooting guard, man, I really struggled to write this position up. Now, some of it is because we just need to get injury news, right? So the Heat, Winslow and Whiteside did not travel with the team, so they're almost definitely not going to play tonight. But Dragic and Waiters both might be back, and so that leaves us with, and it's bad too because that's a 9 o'clock start, and so we're going to be at 7 o'clock kind of wondering who the Heat are going to be deploying. So Waiters did travel with the team; he hasn't played in forever. It's hard to imagine him going out and playing any real minutes. The problem is, if Dragic and Waiters don't play, you have crazy great value in guys like Magruder, Ellington, and then to some degree Josh Richardson, whose price has gone up. If they do play, those guys are all basically useless. If one of them plays, you probably can't play any of them either because you just can't know. So, like, how do you view this Heat shooting guard situation?
Well, from my first instinct, when you said you had a tough time writing up a shooting guard, it didn't look like it because you just listed all guys from the same team. So,
but I called it the all caveat team. I said, like, you just can't, like I just can't even, like, I'm not, like, doing this with any great, I'm not doing this with any great confidence. I'm just looking down this list of players and just wondering who to play. I mean, maybe people play Levine. I can get to him in a second. But, with the Heat situation, if we didn't know by lineup lock, like if we didn't know by 7 o'clock or, you know, Dragic and Waiters are still game time decisions, does that kind of dust all these guys off from, like, even being able to consider them?
Yeah, probably. And that, frankly, might just make the slate a complete stay away as well. Like, sometimes there are just so many question marks at a position that it just increases the variance on a given slate so dramatically that, for me personally, it becomes kind of not worth it anymore because it's like, you know, am I really pitting my skill against everyone else's if we all play a bunch of bad $4,000 to $5,000 shooting guards and somebody's happens to get hot? Like, I don't know. That's not why I play DFS. That's not super fun to me. But, But yeah, I mean, these guys, if those guys do miss, these guys, if Richardson, Ellington, and Magruder, if Dragic and Waiters are both out again, I think they're all kind of excellent plays. I mean, Richardson being the headlining guy there. And I think you get actually increased floor here just based on the matchup with Phoenix. They've been reasonable against opposing shooting guards, but they do play super fast. So that just tends to raise everyone's floor. I don't know. It would feel great if those guys would wind up missing, if there were question marks or, you know, basically, you listed them in the right order, I think. Like, Richardson should still get some minutes. The other two guys disappear completely for me if either of the Dragic and Waiters guys come back.
Right, Richardson's the only guy that is considered safe. The problem with him, he's 6,000 or 5,900 on FanDuel, so he's not the days of him at being 4,500.
He's not safe.
No. That's not a safe price for him, really. And so, yeah, he's safe in terms of minutes because he runs backup point guard or even sometimes starting point guard when Dragic, they kind of shift Dragic over to the two. And he's pretty versatile. He's just a versatile player in general. So his minutes are the safest, but he's just not cheap anymore. And so that's the problem there. Other guys, I mean, I think you could see people playing Zach LaVine against Philly. But LaVine's a guy that I think people probably, this is maybe the Collison thing, like just are thinking back to a time, because I see him as a high ownership at times where I'm like, really? You know, like, why? and I'm not sure if people are like, or hearkening back to the bygone days of when he was just the point guard and they didn't have anybody else on the team, really, like last year at times when he was kind of running this, but that really isn't the case for him. He's playing strict shooting guard this year. There are times when he just totally disappears at this price. Like, he had an 18-point game against Portland, 35 minutes day or night, a 19-point game against OKC. Those are like two decent matchups, I would say. And he's had some okay-ish games. He relies on scoring. Do you think you see people play LaVine maybe more than they should?
I mean, it's really tough to say with LaVine because I think people get attracted to, you know, the electric playmaking, right? Like, he's obviously a guy that gets out there and slam dunks the ball really well. So that's real sweet. But the thing about LaVine is he was so, like, he's kind of like Richardson in this way where he was so much more interesting at 5,000 or 5,400 than he is up in this range. Like, he's now moved up into the range of a guy who, like, you can play him in the right matchup, but you probably don't want to play him in the wrong matchup. And I'm just not sure tonight. I mean, going up against Philly, yeah, they're certainly not a terrible matchup by any stretch, but, like, I don't know. It seems far from the slam dunk it would have been, you know, had the situation been just a little bit different.
I also wrote up Garrett Temple. If Lawson weren't to play, I do think you see low to mid 30s minutes out of Temple, who does play some backup point guard for them at times. He's another guy that will just, I put him in the Dante Cunningham club of, is he even playing? Like, he's 32 minutes on the court. Like, what has he been doing the whole time? like, what are you doing out there, pal?
Ben McLemore played 44 minutes last night. Guess what his line was?
Well, this is what happens. This is really what happens on teams with legit high usage superstars, right? That aren't ball distributors. And this happened, and it's the reason we mentioned guys like that play with Boogie Cousins or Anthony Davis, where you can stand out there for a long time because those guys aren't going to pass you the ball, right? And so, like, you're not, like, you're Dante Cunningham or you're Garrett Temple. Boogie and Davis are not passing you the ball. So there goes every opportunity where they touch the ball in the post is the end of the opportunity of you scoring any points, unless you're able to, like, grab a rebound or the ball bounces into your hands. And I think there probably is, if we were to look at it, those kind of guys are concentrated on teams with just legit superstars on them. And like, you see this with Mabab Mute with the Clippers. So, like, it's okay, pal. Just go out and play defense. We don't really need anything else from you. And so Temple kind of falls into that club. And just because, and also because he just has a guy like Boogie on his team that just is, everyone knows, like, I'm not getting the ball from him. Let's go on to small forward. TJ Warren started last night. I don't know if that was a surprise. I was a little surprised about it. It might have just been I missed the note on that happening with them moving Tucker back to the bench. Warren was a guy who earlier in the season was basically taking the most shots on the team for the Suns, and then he got hurt, and then when he came back, they did the typical Suns thing. They're like, yeah, you know what, dude? You're just going to sit on the bench now. And then
did the exact same thing with Markieff Morris, by the way. Like, literally the exact same script.
Oh, last year, you mean?
He was shooting like 20 shots a game. Then he got hurt, and then they were like, "Hey, man, while you were hurt, we decided you shouldn't shoot anymore." So,
or just, we don't play. You don't play anymore, dude. Like, just like, you don't play anymore, and you're gonna sit on the bench, and we're gonna have guys like Marquise Chris and PJ Tucker. That's the future. And anyway, so he goes. But then last night they're like, "Oh, psych, you're playing 41 minutes against the Clippers," and he went right back to taking 20 shots. And I think that, and he played fine. I think he led the team in scoring, maybe without looking at the game log totally, but he was just a guy that was shooting high teens worth of shots earlier in the season. And now the price has fallen because of all this bench time. Is he basically, would you just say he's a must play now if he's just going to be back in the starting lineup and, I don't know, taking all of terrible PJ Tucker's minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably call him that. It's not an ideal matchup with the Heat just because they play so slowly, but obviously it really helps that Justice Winslow didn't even fly to Phoenix for the game, probably because he was so scared to play against TJ Warren, would be my personal guess. But Warren isn't a guy who goes out there and does this independent of matchup. Like, I mean, we saw him score nearly a fantasy point per minute against the Clippers, sure, but against Utah and Toronto, he had 14 total fantasy points in 36 minutes. So, you know, I guess you take what you can get on this slate, and obviously the increased minutes raise the floor quite significantly. So I would say, yes, he probably is a must play, and I think that also speaks to how lousy the slate is.
Yeah, well, earlier in the season when he was just, you know, the definitive starter, there he went through stretches of really high, like he played these minutes sort of on lock for a stretch, and then again, like, he got hurt, and then he sat up for basically a month, and now he's back. So I think that if he's willing to just keep chucking, which he seems willing to do, it seems like the Suns are just going to be okay with it because they know his profile and the fact that they're going to, you know, just get him back out there for 40 minutes. I can't imagine they just threw him out there just because of matchup either. Like, there's nothing in particular about that Clippers matchup last night that would have, you know, raise alarm bells for me. This is why he's starting. So I just think he is back. I'm just going to, at this point, sometimes you just have to trust it. Look, sometimes you get a guy back in the starting lineup like Jordan McRae last night who goes out and plays 15 minutes. I don't know why. Like, I'm going to need someone to explain to me why some of these things happen. TJ Warren doesn't really fit that bill just because we have a track record on sort of what his playing time is. After him, I don't know. I mean, Kawhi against Toronto. I mean, what do you think about Kawhi against Toronto? He got sick. The reason he sat out the other day was, I think he had like a stomach ache or
gastrointestinitis. Yep.
What is that? That's a tummy ache? A tum-tum?
Yeah, he had a little belly ache.
Little tum-tum hurt. Kevin Love had a little tummy pains last night too. Left the game with 5 minutes to go. So fun times. But Kawhi against Toronto matchup's supposed to be close-ish. You know, Spurs minus six favorites. Spurs expect to put up around 108 points. Do you see Kawhi as having a high floor tonight against the Raptors?
Well, I mean, I guess I would want to read that he was fully past whatever was going on because he only played 20 minutes against the Hawks in what wasn't a blowout. So I guess like I'm not fully trusting that he's going to go out there and play his full allotment of minutes. But if he does, like if he does have the clean bill of health, I do think it's a reasonable spot here. Toronto, obviously not quite as strong against small forwards with Demari Carroll playing just 20 minutes a game right now. They're a lot weaker defensively after Carroll hits the bench. And, you know, Kawhi could easily double that minute total, again, assuming all's well. But, yeah, sure. I mean, I think he's a decent guy just to lock up a good portion of salary with on a crazy night.
Yeah, I could also see people playing Wilson Chandler maybe against the Kings. This game, it does expect to, Vegas does see it, even though it's the Kings are a slower team, they see points going up here, 107 each implied coming in. So 214 is actually a little higher than I thought that the line would be, mostly because it just doesn't seem like the Kings can score with that much frequency to be able to kind of, I don't know, just 107 for them seems high. But Wilson Chandler coming off a nice game last night, can you trust guys like his minutes enough? Like, do you think 32 minutes is a fine number to play it safe with Chandler coming off the game last night?
I mean, I think Chandler is playing in more than 32 minutes a game recently, like 37, 36, 37. It seems that is kind of where they'd like his rotation to be. Of course, you just kind of never know with the Nuggets. Like the three games prior to that, he played 27, 28, and 29.
Yeah, that's my issue, because this is like fool me once territory with him, right? Like, so the reason when we set minutes on guys is you kind of need to, you want to sort of, sometimes you want to set because it's a new situation. Sometimes you want to set because you want to play it safe. You know, guys like bench guys, maybe. Sometimes it's something's totally changed. Teams like the Nuggets, they're very, very difficult to figure out.
Like the Magic, you know.
Right. They're just like, so this is one of those things where I feel like maybe, you know, again, it's once bitten, but you set Wilson Chandler at 36 minutes and then he goes out and plays 27 because reasons unknown. And so I don't know, that's where I'm 32, I agree with you, is low, but I don't know, the Nuggets just, they scare me. They're one of these teams that just will just randomly pull a guy and you'll never see him again.
Yeah, that's true, but I think it's like thinking that way on a, so it's a bad slate, right? And the nice thing about DFS is you simply don't have to play if you don't feel confident in the plays. But I think like ignoring good plays because of some uncertainty around them, like especially when you're going to choose a bad play instead, is kind of just playing with scared money, I think, a little bit. Like if you look at his line, sure, like he has the one disastrous game against the Clippers, but other than that, he really hasn't killed you. I mean, he can, I don't know, pseudo disappear like he did against Philly, but even that was 4x points per dollar, which again, like, doesn't make you lose automatically. In the other games, Golden State and Minnesota, if he's in your lineups, you're in good shape, even in big tournaments, like almost 6x on this price. So I think Chandler's is a very good play probably. And that's relative to the other guys you can choose from on this slate, and understand that sometimes really good plays don't work out and certain really good plays work out less than others. And so I think Chandler falls in that category, but yeah, I think it would be incorrect to just push his minutes down because he's kind of been bad sometimes.
Yeah, probably right. Paul George has been a guy people have been wanting to run out lately. I don't love the matchup here against Marcus Morris. They will keep Marcus Morris on the court when other teams are bringing sort of elite small forward types onto the court. Like, so the Pistons have been really kind of tough to gauge in terms of who they want to play between like the 3 and 4 position between Laura Harris and Marcus Morris. I feel like I've seen something along the lines of they wanted to keep Morris out there when guys like Paul George, LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, guys like that come to town, because he just is a good defender. So I guess there's some minutes upside on Morris, and for the same reason I get a little worried about Paul George in this situation, simply because I don't know, our system seems to be lower on Paul George than others at times, because there's been a lot of times where people have played him sort of almost on the chalkier side, and we've just been saying kind of no thanks to him.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I mean, when I look at George in general, like, he strikes me as another one of these guys whose price is 8,000-ish, and he pays that occasionally, and usually when he has great matchups. Detroit, really just not a great matchup. Like, I talked about them allowing a top 8 total to opposing point guards in spite of their slow pace. Well, they've allowed a bottom 3 total to opposing small forwards. So they're just a team that, you know, unlike some teams like the Spurs, say, who just have a sound organizational defensive philosophy, the Pistons really aren't that way. They thrive more on a good individual defenders. And so, you know, for that reason, I don't think it's a super, super spot. People will note that George did put up 5x points per dollar against Detroit earlier in December. So it's not like it's impossible for him here. It's just a question of, is this really a position where you want to pay up? And is George the guy you want to pay up for? And for me personally, I just don't think that's the case.
Over at Power Forward, there's some interesting guys like in the middle tier, cheaper side of things. So James Johnson was one guy. Well, last game when the Heat ran out, mostly their B team, when they were without basically everyone, Dragic, Winslow, Whiteside, and Waiters, Johnson saw a ton of minutes off the bench in the mid-30s, and he was great. The price is up because he's had some really good bench minutes this season. So you're looking at 5,400 on him. If you didn't know, so we know Winslow is not going to play and we know Whiteside's not going to play. But if there was an inkling of Waiters and Dragic coming back, do you think we need to bump? Like right now I have James Johnson at 33 minutes. That feels like it might be high, especially if we're staring down a guy, mostly Waiters. Like if Waiters, a guy like Waiters is coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that number seems too overly high, but I think James Johnson, frankly, is probably a play on 30 minutes too, you know, maybe even on 28. Like he's been putting up better than a fantasy point per minute recently. He's actively, like the problem with James Johnson in the past has been, like he is a guy that can just go out there and, you know, get out there on the fast break. He can be a very active defender, put up big defensive totals as well. He can kind of, well, I guess now he's considered a power forward. When he was a small forward, he could rebound the position very efficiently as well. So the problem with James Johnson isn't what he does when he's actually on the court. It's always been whether or not he can get on the court. And so I think if he plays even 30 minutes at 5,400, that's just a straight up bargain. And I would be pleased to play him on that. Now, will he play those minutes? That's another question. You know, 34 last game, but 24, 18, 25, and so on before that. And granted, obviously, there's a lot of injuries there that maybe weren't there in the past. But, you know, I think Winslow is the guy that Waiter or he needs to be more of a secure role in the lineup. Like, I don't think Waiters impacts his minutes too dramatically. Given that Winslow isn't going to be there, I think he's pretty safe tonight.
Pascal Siakam played 30 or so minutes last game with Patrick Patterson out. I don't know if that's the way the Raptors want to go going forward. They've really shown a reluctance to play him really any minutes at times.
His biggest total of the season, yeah.
Yeah, and he's had 28 and 27 at times, but then he's had some, you know, 4, 6, 5s. I just don't know what the truth is with him. I'm not sure if they see him as, you know, with Patterson out. Patterson was playing like a lot of small ball four. Siakam doesn't really fit that profile, but they just need bodies at this point that they can kind of approximate playing power forward, especially if they don't want to play, because they've moved Damari Carroll there too, but they don't seem like Carroll might still just be hurt, the kind of playing hurt. They don't play him big minutes. Siakam's 3,600, a really bad position. Is it okay to just sort of punt there and just move on with your life at power forward and kind of pay up everywhere else? Because this is just, on a night-to-night basis, a very difficult position.
Yeah, I mean, Siakam is one of these guys who, like, if you're going to play him, basically you're just hoping for rebounds and blocks. Like, he'll go long stretches without scoring a single point from the field. So that's not, of course, really where you want to be. But, I mean, we've seen in the past, like, what you like about him is the price, right? Not really the player profile, not really anything else. But it basically the minimum salary, if he's going to go out there and even just get 10 rebounds, he's pretty close to paying his price off. So I don't know that it's like a slam dunk or anything. Like, I wouldn't be super thrilled to put him in the lineup, but if you're looking at the position and maybe some other question marks pop up and, you know, it just feels like a terrible position overall, I could see, you know, just making the decision, hey, you know, James Johnson's not looking like a strong play anymore. Maybe we just get away from this position cheaply and move on with our lives. But he's not a guy I would like put stars and hearts around as a guy who I want to build around tonight.
Right. This happens with the Raptors in general, because again, sort of like along that Boogie Cousins thing, when you have a guy like DeMar DeRozan on your team, who's just not going to pass you the ball at all. Like, once DeRozan gets the ball, Siakam could probably just start running back on defense. Like, he doesn't...
Well, and this a reasonable comp for him there is Bismack Biyombo. Like, when Biyombo was on the Raptors, he never touched the ball a single time a game. Like, right. And if Siakam's just filling that role, yeah, he could just disappear for really, really, really long stretches, and then you're just at the whim of where the ball bounces on the rebound. So, yeah, I'm not psyched about it.
I would love to play Jokic. I don't see there's any chance that he's not in immediate foul trouble in this game. It's well documented at this point. The guy is a total foul box. He doesn't know how to play defense. He's phenomenal. He's a fantastic. Like, if he could play any defense, this guy would be like almost like a $9,000 player, I think, because he just does every single other thing that you want to happen when you're rostering someone in DFS. The problem is, he just grabs those first two fouls in the first couple minutes, and he's off the court, and then you just don't ever see the end of him. Tonight, he's likely going to have to guard Boogie. Is it a case where we just can't trust that he's going to play enough? Like, even last night, 25 minutes against Golden State, he did have a couple fouls early, but then he actually didn't foul.
44 fantasy points in 25 minutes.
And the two fouls came early, and that kind of dusted off some of his minutes. They also could be playing without Fareed and Daryl Arthur again, which basically just leaves only him and Nurkic to sort of be the big guys on the team. What do we do with a guy like Jokic?
I think if Fareed and Arthur are going to miss a game again, I think you just play him. Like, yeah, he is the foulingest big man in the league right now, I think. Like, last time we talked about this, I think he and Len were kind of neck and neck. But
they kind of look alike, too.
Put together an excellent string of, like, five fouls a game for a really long period of time. So, yeah, good job, Nikola. You're doing it. But, you know, the points per dollar on Jokic are just so disgusting. Like, to put up 44 fantasy points in 25 minutes and then 37, 22, and 42, and 32. Like, he's just an animal out there. Like, it's just this kind of production. I don't want to say it's unprecedented because obviously there are guys who do it, but those guys' names are usually like Russell Westbrook and stuff like that, not like just a random big man on the Nuggets who can't get 30 minutes a game, you know? So it's sort of unprecedented. It makes me kind of giddy and like I'm betting my life savings on a spin of a roulette wheel when I play Jokic, but the value is just so excellent there that, you know, at an otherwise kind of dicey position, it might just be correct to just, again, say like, if you're not comfortable playing Jokic tonight, maybe it's a night to take off or something. But I'm not sure all in all because foul trouble is so unpredictable. But, yeah, I think I would lean towards him being a play.
Yeah, no, it's so funny because he's a lot like Embiid in this way in that they have concerns around different reasons, but their fantasy points per minute – and actually, they're priced the same on FanDuel too, but their fantasy points per minute are just almost unparalleled. And if they could just, if you lock them up for 35 minutes a game, like some of these guards, you know, like the Westbrook and Harden types, they would just be $9,000, almost $10,000 player. These guys are so good, and they just cannot stay on the court. So, I mean, they can't stay on the court for different reasons. So, I'm not comparing them in that way, but yeah, no, I think it's probably worth it to just take the risk on Jokic and just hope that he doesn't get boogied too early in the game and can kind of just, I don't know, make his way through, because yeah, there's almost no one else has the same kind of just upside on this slate as him. After him, it's hard to trust the power forward situation in Detroit. You know, they moved Tobias Harris to the bench, but then he outplays Lauri with minutes at times, so I'm not sure that move was done maybe just to get more scoring off the second unit. I'm not exactly sure. It looks like Stan Van Gundy's fine to just kind of ride the hot hand, so to speak, of whoever's going there, so I don't know if that's necessarily a safe situation. You get Georgie Deng, who's kind of interesting. I could see people playing him against the Sixers. Let's finish off with center. I guess it really on FanDuel comes down to just Boogie or Embiid. I know they're not the same price, but do you think that Boogie against the Jokic and Nurkic tandem over there in Denver, do you think he becomes like? Do you think people will just find a reason to get his salary in on FanDuel tonight?
I think they might just wind up getting his salary in because there's such a lack of other good big money options. Like, I mean, if you're listening carefully at home, like we just haven't listed any other big money player tonight. And that's largely because you got Boogie on the top of the tier here. And then you get Wall, who, you know, not a great matchup with Dallas and the price has gone up. Towns against Philly, that's a reasonable spot. But after that, it's Kawhi, you know. Right. So, like, things really have fallen off a cliff in terms of big money plays, which is, again, pretty unusual for an eight-team slate tonight. Like, this is – or an eight-game slate. It's like all the big money players are off. And so the other aspect of this coin is that we've listed a lot of really cheap guys at a lot of different positions. And I think for that reason alone, you probably just wind up going up and grabbing Cousins. Not to say Embiid's not a good play tonight. Like, I think Embiid is probably an excellent play tonight. But I'm just not sure that the salary will wind up working out that way.
Yeah, and I think on DraftKings, you end up playing them both just because of the multi-position on both those guys. So I think playing them both is pretty reasonable and slash probably correct. I think they're both showing up in the lineups now, and when that happens this early in the day, you can pretty much count on it happening just the rest of the day. But yeah, I think on FanDuel that's going to be sort of the question. It's really close. I think some, you know, in the first run of these lineups, I think Embiid's in the first two, and then Cousins, or first four, and Cousins is in like five through seven or something,
so it's
like that.
Razor thin.
Yes, it's very, very close. And Cousins was one of those guys that'll just, if there's just any cheaper play that comes in, or I juggle the minutes around a little bit more this morning, which we'll do, he could just be in there by, you know, by the time you're eating lunch. So
and the Cousins lineup also doesn't have Kawhi in it. Like, if we wind up deciding that maybe Kawhi's minutes aren't as safe, like if the gastroenteritis thing is flaring up, or it just doesn't look like he's going to play other than his max minutes, like I could, there's a lot of ways Boogie could wind up making his way into the lineup.
I like Drummond on DraftKings, still coming pretty cheap for a guy that basically is going to give you that double-double bonus almost every single time he takes the court, so or get you darn close. The Pacers with Miles Turner, he's an offensive center, and that's it. They don't really have a ton that's going to be able to guard Drummond down low, so I don't mind him on DraftKings, but it's really going to be between those three guys. And if you really felt comfortable that Nurkic, if Reed and Arthur were both going to sit again, and you thought Nurkic was going to see, you know, 22 minutes or something like that on DraftKings, he's basically the minimum. So I think you could take a risk there on him at 3,100. He has he's another one of these guys. If you can just see the court, he has he's a decent fantasy.
He's a Jokic light.
Yeah, sure. He's a decent fantasy points per dollar of points per minute guy. Just can't see the court. So anyway, buddy, you know what? All this talking has made me not as gloom and doom and gloom about this slate as I thought at the beginning of the podcast.
All right, Doug's all in. I will be taking a nap or hanging out with my family probably because I still feel like this is a crazy slate.
Yeah, I don't mind. I actually don't mind the way some of it's shaping up. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, which is informing most of what we talk about here. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, and NFL through the playoffs, so you're set to go with both of those sports. All right, buddy, talk to you again on Thursday. We're talking more basketball.
I'll miss you, buddy.